We are Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying,
hey, man.
Glad to have you listening to Atlanta's number one sports station. It's number one show, Dukes and Bell. Will McFadden, he is a Falcons senior editor and writer for Falcons.com, joining us as we discuss not only the upcoming game on Sunday, but some of the elements of what's been going on with our team. And, Will, it's good to have you back on the show. Brad Guzan, by the way, on the way in about 10 minutes, so stay tuned for that. Atlanta United fans and 17s as we get ready for the playoffs. Will, first and foremost, as we talk about, you know, coming off this loss, which was ugly against Seattle, everybody up there at Flowery, we were there Wednesday talking about, you know, turning the page, getting right. What do you think that entails? What do we need to do coming off of that loss against Seattle, heading into this game, a huge game against Tampa, to make us, the fan base, feel better than what we saw on Sunday and certainly the way maybe we felt a few weeks ago against Tampa?
Yeah, it's a great question and a great place to start, because I think that really a re-emphasis on the details throughout the week in practice, and then more importantly, bringing that to Sunday. And I think if you see an opening offensive drive, you know, that moves the ball down the field consistently, doesn't have these kind of self-inflicted setbacks that have, you know, plagued the Falcons at times offensively this year, that would be a great sign that maybe this week in practice, the emphasis was correctly placed and effective. Defensively, I think really we've been waiting to see more of those impact plays. And the secondary has played really well all year. That was not the case on Sunday, and kind of the communication breakdowns, I think, were part of the issue there. So really, for me, after Sunday's performance in which, you know, Raheem Morris said it himself, the team kind of came out flat. But I do think the bigger kind of priority to fix are the details and the pre-snap penalties, kind of the miscues of that nature that are really making you beat yourself in addition to the opponent you're playing.
And, Will, we've spent in like basically all season. Well, hell, since I've been here in 1998, I spent every season talking about pass rush. And we asked Coach yesterday about, is it in the building? You know, because obviously folks are looking to the trade deadline, and can you go get something else? That doesn't seem like there's an impact player that we're going to go for. Do you feel that we're not going to be making the big move at the trade deadline?
Yeah, that is still kind of the way that I lean at this point in time, for a couple of reasons. You know, the Falcons right now are 20th in terms of cap space. Now, that's not prohibitive by any means. You know, you can always kind of work with the cap to go prioritize stuff. But I also think the Falcons want to be, and they have been under Terry Fontenot, cognizant of short-term, you know, needs and short-term gains versus the long-term situation. And, you know, given what he inherited when he first started here, he's right to feel that way. And so I think that is certainly an element. But then when you look at the defensive line and the outside linebackers that this team kept after training camp and during roster cutdowns, I do feel like they like the group that they have, that it is a versatile, deep group. But you're completely right. The sacks have not been there. They have gotten an uptick in pressure over the last couple of weeks, but I know that kind of doesn't mean too much when the quarterback is not actually on the ground. And yeah, it has been a number one concern, I think, defensively for a while now. That's nothing new for this specific regime, but it is kind of on them to figure out for 2024, how do you turn the pressure into sacks, because that is really the best way to set an offense off course.
Will, we're heading into week 8. What is our strength? In your opinion, what do you think the strength of this football team is? I said over the next few weeks we're going to learn a lot about these teams around the NFL, and the cream is going to rise, and hopefully we're part of that. But what is the strength of this football team?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, I think it's a little bit – There's kind of two parts of it, right? I think when you look at individual units, you could point to the way the secondary is played, starting with your two safeties back there, as a legitimate strength. You could look offensively, and the times when this team has not set themselves back, they're moving the ball at a good clip, and they're versatile, and they're more explosive than they really have been, you know, over the last few years. So I think dynamically, offensively, that is a real strength, in that there's any given matchup, you feel good about the ways in which you can attack an opposing defense. And then when you've got a secondary that has been playing, again, kind of Sunday aside, as well as they have been, that's going to keep you in a lot of games. And especially when the field shrinks, which we've seen the Falcons, you know, kind of allow teams to matriculate their way down the field, but then when they get to that 30-yard line, that's usually when they bow up, and we've seen those drives end in field goals. So from a on-field perspective, I think those are the strengths right now, the offensive dynamism, and then defensively that secondary and the coverage. But really, maybe the main strength of this team has been its resilience. And, you know, again, Seattle game, let's just move that to the side. It has been a team that, against really good teams so far, like the easy schedule thing feels like forever ago, but I feel like that has not come to pass. It feels like every game has been against a good team and kind of difficult, but they have stayed right in it. They have not collapsed, and that is part of the makeup and identity that this team is forming. And if they put themselves in a position late in the year, I think that mentality and kind of that identity is going to be so beneficial to this group. So those are kind of the strengths that I see of this team right now.
Talking to Will McFadden, guys, Falcons.com senior editor and writer here on the WadeFord.com hotline. It's kind of easy for fans to go, well, the Bucs are dead in the water. They got the two best wide receivers on the squad are out. Do you, obviously, we think it's going to be a lower scoring game. I don't think we get into a dial-a score, and the intensity will be there after having one of those awful flat games that just seem to happen to every NFL team. But do you think we come out and try to establish the run that we couldn't get going last time against the Bucs?
Yeah, I think that what you'll see, at least from Atlanta's offense, is kind of what it's been all season long, which is largely dictated by the opponent. You know, I mentioned the different avenues that this offense has to attack a team, and so when you feel good about a number of different options, you can usually identify, okay, here's what a defense is taking away, but here's what they're giving us, so we'll just go ahead and take what they're giving us. And obviously in the first matchup between these two teams, that was the passing game. They were in a ton of cover three. They had their other safety rolled down and in the box, and so Atlanta said, all right, thank you, we'll just be hitting 12-yard, 17-yard plays kind of right in the middle of the field or on the boundary. I'm really curious to see how Antoine Winfield Jr., his return for this game, he's been back the last couple of weeks but wasn't in the first matchup, how that changes things. I wouldn't be shocked at all if you see Tampa kind of try to speed this game up and emphasize its rushing attack. So whether that means Atlanta tries to early on score quickly and maybe prevent Tampa Bay from going with that game plan by necessity of having to be down a couple of scores and just really have to kind of keep pace, that's one approach for Atlanta. Or they could just say, look, if you want to go toe-to-toe with us, we think that we're now the better team, given that Mike Evans and Chris Godwin are out. And maybe they lean on their run game as well and kind of say, okay, we'll speed this game up and walk out of here with a 21-14 victory. It doesn't need to get up into the 30s. I'm curious to see how Atlanta's going to play that. But first and foremost, I think the emphasis all week for them is more on Atlanta. It is more about correcting some of the stuff that we saw Sunday against Seattle. And for that reason, like I think that Atlanta is going to be less focused on who is not in the lineup for Tampa, because it was never really about that in the first place. It was more about getting some of those issues cleaned up.
Well, here's the deal. What from a defensive standpoint, we need to force, I feel like, Baker into having to throw the football. Can we take the run away? They've got some really good running backs. That's what I think. If I'm Jimmy Lake, that's how I'm going into this game. I want Baker to throw it 50 times because we know he can make mistakes, and he'll throw it to us instead of, you know, saying, all right, we're gonna play the zone and do the things we normally do. Do we change that up? Do you feel like they may play that a little differently this time around based on the injuries?
I think you certainly could see that. Yeah, I do think that's a good thought there, because, you know, man-on-man coverage is mano-a-mano, right? If you feel like your dudes are better than theirs,
yep,
maybe you feel a little more comfortable saying, hey, go line up and play. And certainly when Evans and Godwin are not out there, that changes the calculus. And I like A.J. Terrell and Mike Evans have had some amazing matchups throughout the year, so it's not like they have been afraid to play man coverage. Now, the Falcons are running the sixth most zone coverage in the league this season, so they have definitely trended towards a zone-heavy approach. But I think that if Tampa Bay is going to lean on the run game, you may want to have, you know, a more of a heavy box presence defensively, which could take some of those guys and move them to emphasize run defense a little bit more and leave Mike Hughes and A.J. Terrell and D. Alford maybe a little bit more one-on-one with those guys. But, yeah, it would be really a good time, I think, for Atlanta to change some things up because Baker is so smart, because he did just see this defense. Give him a different picture. Give him a different look. Crowd the line of scrimmage. Drop some guys out. Like, I do think everything is on the table for Atlanta's defense here. The one thing that you mentioned, though, that gives me a slight pause is, are we sure Baker is the quarterback that you want to really get into a rhythm and work into a ladder? Like, he seems to me like such a gamer that if he is throwing the ball 40 times, you know, I don't think that's the absolute worst game plan for Tampa because he is that type of player. But I expect to see an emphasis on the run game. And more importantly, I expect to see some of the running backs, Sean Tucker, Rashad White, Bucky Irving, on the field together and used in different ways, and maybe as receivers as well.
Right. Before we cut you loose, Will McFadden from Falcons.com, we thought it was great to get Matthew Judon, thought it was going to really help Ebba Cady, some of the other guys pop. I know we missed Braylon Trice, but are you surprised how ineffective the pass rush has been since Judon has got here? And did the Patriots maybe know something we didn't?
I think Matthew Judon has not necessarily displayed the power that I thought in watching his tape when he was initially brought here. I thought his pop off the edge was incredible, both in setting the run and just forcing tackles back into the lap of the quarterback. We haven't seen that, or at least I haven't seen that to the degree that I thought I would have. And again, the sacks need to start coming, right? They are not where the team would like them to be. But these last 2 weeks, the Falcons are tied for ninth in generating pressure among all teams. This past week, they had pressure on over 50% of Seattle's pass snaps, which was fourth best in the league. So when the coaching staff says they are seeing an uptick in the pressure and that they like where they're trending, I don't think that they are just trying to blow smoke with that. But the key is to get the quarterback on the ground. Baker gets the ball out quickly. That's going to be tough to do. But to win in this league, you got to get to the quarterback. You've got to impact the quarterback. They're moving him off his spot. They're making him kind of hold on to the football, which is giving him a little more chance. But you got to ultimately get him on the ground to create those negative plays. So I am a little bit surprised, again, given the investment and some of the guys that are here. But the pressure generation is happening. Let's hope that the sacks are a lagging metric, and that metric starts to take effect this week.
Will, thank you so much, man. Continue to do a great job. Falcons.com, senior editor and writer, and we appreciate you dropping by, man.
Hey, I appreciate it. Anytime.
Good stuff. All right, guys, we've got more to get to here, including Brad Guzan's going to stop by, Mike. He had a couple of saves the other night that were incredible, but we've got probably the toughest task we've had in front of us in a very long time with Miami standing in the way. Brad Guzan joins us coming up from Atlanta United on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Talking about the team, this upcoming game. And, you know, the pass rush thing, we're in week 7. I just feel like this is not going to fundamentally change unless you're going to make a big trade, which, again, right now is unlikely. I don't feel like that's the direction or the tenor in which we're headed. But I will say that we can improve. How much do we improve between now and, let's just say, you know, week 14, right? 7 weeks from now, what does this look like? I don't know. The crazy thing is we're winning in spite of the fact that we're not getting to the quarterback, especially on the ground. To his point, Will was talking about getting him on the ground. We're winning in spite of that. So how do you look at this? Like, it's not the end all, but it's still a concern.
Well, I mean, you know, last year we lost 3 games because we couldn't get the quarterback on the ground, 3 specifically. You know, Nashville, you know, the Arizona game, the Vikings game comes to mind. It just it's aggravating because it's funny how some things just, like, drive certain teams' fans base crazy. And this is one. This has historically been an issue for this team. You know, I saw Mark Raimondi from ESPN.com was talking about Jimmy Lake was asked about Damone Harris getting in the game more. And you're like, who's Damone Harris? Well, he's on the depth chart, and he is an outside linebacker. He's played 11 games since 2019.
Wow.
But he said he's earned the reps in practice. Now, again, with all due respect to Damone Harris, and hopefully he has a 3-sack day in Tampa, you know, you're talking about Damone Harris. I mean, we just don't have these guys in the building. I know I mentioned earlier, you know, Braylon Trice is a guy that we'll have to wait till next year to see what he looks like. But everybody, even, you know, Coach Rock kind of admitted to us 2 weeks ago that he had high expectations for him. I think Terry has got to go. I think that you've got to go find something. And even if it's, you know, maybe not a superstar, but you've got to find some new piece to bring in here at edge rush. And I know we're running out of draft pick equity to give up, so maybe something requires a 6-rounder if we have one of those left. I don't know, but you got to do something. We can't keep playing like this. I know that everything's trending the right way, but you're still not getting there. You know, I mean, it sounds to me like, you know, it's excuse making. You know, it's manipulating the numbers to say, no, it's not as – fans can see it's as bad as it's always been.
If you are hoping that they do something, then you're hoping that some of these teams that maybe guys are not available right now continue to lose, because that's also going to factor into this, Mike. I mean, right now you got a bunch of teams that are, you know, 4-3, 4-2. They don't feel like they're out of it, right?
Right.
And so if your team like the – let's just say the Raiders, they're 2-5. Raiders aren't going anywhere. But if they are, you know, 2-7 in 2 weeks from now before the trade deadline, does that increase the likelihood that a Crosby may be up out of there?
Right.
I mean, those are the kind of things we're talking about. The Giants. I mean, the Giants are 2-5. If the Giants somehow win a couple of games, are they going to be fire-selling it? I don't think so, right?
Because they just took on Brian Burns. The one thing the Giants have, they've got a good thing.
They do.
You know, with Thibodeau and with Brian Burns, problem is they've also – it's funny because sometimes, as Mike Smith would say, sacks don't tell the total picture. They've got a bit of an anomaly because quarterbacks are actually getting success with them, you know, as far as down the field in the red zone, they're having success. So I don't know if that means the corners are suspect. They did lose some in free agency. But either way, the Giants – we're going to see the Giants later this year. They get after it.
They get after it. And the point is they're not relinquishing any of those pass
rushers.
No, I
can't
see
them coming off a guy like Burns who just, you know, moved heaven and earth to pay for.
So we'll see where it goes. Awaiting Brad Guzan, guys, as we'll talk Atlanta United coming up here Friday. Tomorrow, the best of three series starts down there in Fort Lauderdale as they take on Miami. You will be able to listen to that match, by the way, on Star 94. We will have Hawks basketball here for you. And speaking of Hawks basketball, did we just get an update who's not maybe available tomorrow?
Well, it's funny. I was joking around that we're in midseason form because we got Embiid tapping out after back-to-backs. We got Draymond with the technical. And now a hamstring for Bogey Bogdan Bogdanovich.
Oh, wow.
Am I reading that right, Chris? Hammy?
Yeah, and unfortunately, literally as we speak, another injury update from the Hawks. Kobe Bufkin sustained a right shoulder subluxation during the Hawks practice on October 19th. He is determining treatment options, and an update will be provided as appropriate, so he will not play indefinitely.
Wait. What is that? Like a dislocated shoulder?
Sublux. I would imagine you don't want anything to be subluxed.
I mean, what is that? He was already dealing with an injury, right?
It is the medical term for a partial dislocation.
That's what I thought. Okay, that's what I was going to say. I mean, give me that, Turtle. Don't give me all the. That's too much medical stuff.
I was reading it verbatim, Carl.
That's too much medical stuff.
You know, I should thank you. I should sue Archer. What's the statute of limitations for lawsuits for physical damage?
What happened?
We were down in Destin years ago. He dumped me out of a golf cart. My left shoulder's never been the same. To pop it back in on the golf course.
Now you're just remembering that?
You know, you lean over to pick up a golf ball, and then he just dumped me, and I went, you know, rolled over, bang, on my shoulder.
There's nothing worse than a golf cart accident. All right, so dislocated. So that's Kobe Bufkin. Now, we knew he was going to be out, but now it's indefinite. All right.
Is Brad mad that I said he gave up a soft call on Twitter? I'm sorry.
He's set to call in. He's going to dial us
no,
up.
No, we just got the word. They're calling in about 30 seconds.
Yeah, okay, cool. He's going to be here. 404-726-0929. You guys can let us know what you think. And we got into the Hawks conversation. We'll get back into that, by the way, coming up. And also in the 6 o'clock hour, we're going to talk college football.
I just searched edge rushers at trade deadline. Let me throw a name at you. It might not be a household name. What about Za'Darius Smith?
He will be available.
Yeah, because the Browns are fire sailing it. So we'll keep monkeying around trying to find more names for us that might be viable for the Falcons.
He will be available. That's one of the guys that's on that second tier.
Right.
That's not the Miles Garrett and the Max Crosbys of the world, but is very, very good. But again, are the Browns fire sailing it? Let's talk to Brad Guzan, guys. He's big.
He's bold. He's a mutt wall.
And he was just that. Guzan, man, it's good to have you back on the show. All right, look, I got to ask you, before we get into the technical stuff and the match and all of that, and congratulations, by the way. I think everybody's excited to be in this spot. But did you think you guys would be in this spot? It's been a crazy year, Brad.
What's happening, guys? Listen, always a pleasure. As you know, it's been a minute. But listen, going on to your question, it certainly has been a wild year. But what I would say is we never lost that belief. You know, there was games that probably we should have got more from that we didn't. Then there were some games that you're looking, you're saying, wow, can't believe they got out of there with maybe a point or maybe a win at times. And then we put ourselves in a position going into the last game, Orlando away, with the idea that, listen, if we take care of our business, and we knew we needed some help elsewhere, but if we took care of our business, then we'd give ourselves a chance. And, you know, crazier things have happened. And then sure enough, lo and behold, some help from the outside, you know, got us in, and here we are.
But you made the most of it. I mean, that was one of the most exciting matches. Obviously, not as exciting for you because it's obviously, you know, pins and needles. We're watching a 2-0 lead kind of go. It had to be so weird both times. We haven't had a chance to talk to you since you last played Montreal. But, you know, Joseph, I saw you hugging Joseph after the match and, you know, having Joseph take a penalty on you. That's always got to be weird, right?
No, for sure, for sure. You know, and obviously it was a bit heated, like in the midst of the game, right? But it's two guys that are competing at the highest level. And, you know, we spoke, obviously, you know, we speak quite regularly. You know, him and I obviously are good friends and we've got a good relationship, but when you cross that white line, man, it's, you put friendships aside and, so there's a bit of jawing back and forth and, you know, blood was boiling, that's for sure. Thankfully for us, we were able to come out on top at the end of the night.
Brad Guzan joining us, guys. Again, the first leg of this three-game series is tomorrow night in Fort Lauderdale as we get Miami. The second match will be at home. That's Saturday, November 2nd at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Brad, take me inside of these penalty kicks, man. And what I mean by that is we win. Saba converts the fifth and final penalty kick to get the victory. But as your job, how do you defend it? I mean, is it all reactionary? Are you looking for signs that a guy's going to tip you one way or the other? What's going on with you in those moments?
I mean, I think, you know, I wouldn't say it's reactionary. I think you obviously you try to do a little study and little homework and looking at different clips leading into it, right? But at the end of the day, players are so good now they can disguise which way they're gonna go. Are they gonna go to the goalie's right, to the left, you know, high or low? And so you try and give yourself as best of a chance to make the save. And hopefully if you go the right way, you're able to keep it out. And luckily I was able to keep one of the five out and our guys did the rest. And so, in that moment, you know, like I said, if you could save one, you give us a, right. You give the team a chance to hopefully go and convert ours and, you know, fair play to our guys because it takes a lot of guts, for lack of a better word, right, to get up there and step up and convert it. So, fair play to our guys.
It's not like it's a 5-foot putt or a free throw because it's you versus another dude, right? Yeah. I mean, as you said, he can zig or zag. It's Brad Guzan. And again, we haven't talked to him since. It was crazy. March, you could not lose. And then 2 months, we couldn't win. And then all of a sudden, we got out at the right time. And now, after doing a great job in that match in Montreal, your prize is taking on an entire Barcelona all-star team. So how do you – I mean, you know these guys. We all know these guys. So how do you prepare for these guys?
Yeah, I mean, listen, we talked about wanting to be in this position, right? And so, yeah, it is what it is in terms of the opposition. But we wanted to put ourselves in this position, and I've always said once you get into the playoffs, anything can happen. You know, we've seen crazier things, and so we know it's going to be a tough run of games against a good Miami team that obviously has some pretty well known players. But with that being said, again, we believe in our group, we believe in our guys, and it's not going to be easy. Obviously, it's an extreme, you know, it's a quick turnaround in terms of rest and time between games. And so from that side of things, you know, we've got to be, you know, mentally strong and mentally ready because, again, it's not going to be easy on the road in their stadium against a really good team. But with that being said, you know, we feel that we've got enough in our locker room to go out there and get the job done.
All right, two-parter for you here. One, what has changed with Rob Valentino, if anything? And two, do you want him to get the full-time job?
Right.
two big questions. No, listen, the first thing with Rob, right, is he's somebody that puts obviously everything he's got into the club and into the group and into the team. And so when you have someone that leads by example, when you have someone that cares as much as he does in terms of the different roles and responsibilities that he's held within the club, I mean, you go back to, you know, the beginning for him, and he's held every position, I think, on within the staff that there is to hold. And so to see the success that he's been able to get out of the group, that part's been fantastic. And in terms of, you know, his ability to lead us and lead our group and inspire, you know, I think I saw something from Steon the other day just talking about how we're peaking at the right time. And that's what you want. You want somebody that's going to be able to put you in a position to go out there and be successful and go out there and get a result. And he's been able to do that. And as a manager, as a coach, as a leader, that's somebody who you are going to go to battle for. You're going to roll your sleeves up and say, yeah, you know, it is what it is. And we're going out there. We're going to give everything. And at the end of 90 minutes, we'll see where the chips fall.
Well, hey, man, before we cut you loose, as Carl said at the onset, you've always been gracious with your time with us, man. And, you know, people love rooting for you from your caps with the U.S. men's national team. Next year, bro, are you coming back? Is this it? Is this the swan song? Because I know they ran some young guys at you at camp this year.
And you got them up out of there.
And you kept the job. So what's the
you
story?
You got them up out of there.
I appreciate it. No, listen, I don't know, guys. I don't know. Listen, I told you guys at the beginning I was going to take it one day at a time, and that's what I've been doing in terms of training, in terms of games. We've obviously got, you know, a couple tough ones coming up. But I feel good. I feel good mentally. I feel good physically. And for me, I want to keep going, because I still have that burning desire within my belly of, yeah, I want to go out there and compete. And so, you know, hopefully I'm able to carry on doing that.
You look good. Bro, do you like this whole, we play tomorrow and then we got to wait a week? And then if there's a game three, we got to wait another week.
Oh, he needs to rest, Carl. He's 40.
I know, but like, there's two parts of that, right? I mean,
I look 21, don't I?
You do. You do. But listen, Brad, like, don't you want these to happen pretty quickly? I mean, this whole—
You do, right? Because when you're in a good moment, and I've always said this to you guys, you know, when you're in a good moment, you want the games to come thick and fast. You want to play games, right? And that's where you get the buzz. It's not from training. It's going out in front of a sold out stadium and competing and going up against an opposition, and that's where that fire comes from. And so you want those opportunities, and especially when you're playing well, you want that ability to do that. Obviously, this week is an extreme case in terms of such a quick turnaround with the travel to Montreal, back to Atlanta, now in Miami. So there's certainly going to be a little bit of a rest period from game one to game two. But for us, we can't worry about that right now. We've got to give everything into game one, and then we'll regroup and get ready for game two.
All right, man. Good luck. We appreciate you. As always, you're our dude, man. Good luck with everything, and we'll be cheering you on, brother.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Brad Guzan joining us here. He's big. He's bald.
He's a mother wall. Yeah, you can't say that on there. We love the guy. And he just keeps on trucking, bro, doesn't he?
He does. I think he's going to be back. Right. Like, here's the deal. There were times this year, and now we realize the team, the construction of the team wasn't what it needed to be. But there were times where you were like, I don't know, Brad, maybe he lost it. This last match, dude, he was unbelievable.
Hey, and by the way, how does Brad keep doing it at age 40? The amazing restorative powers of Dukes and Bell Heyman Ale, which Brad consumes on a regular basis. Filled with minerals and vitamins, more or less.
Hey, this hour is brought to you by our friends at Buffalo Wild Wings. We love Buffalo Wild Wings, where Boneless Thursday is going down. Buy one, get one boneless wings at Buffalo Wild Wings. All right, we're coming back, guys. Road to the college football playoff. And then we're going to talk with our buddy Brett McMurphy from the Action Network. He's one of the best college football insiders in the business. He's going to join us at 6:20. And we have another injury update. Stay there. It's Dukes and Bell. Georgia Tech has a big game coming up this weekend. Brent Key says he will not rule out his quarterback, Haynes King, just yet, listing him as day-to-day. Mike, Virginia Tech taking on Georgia Tech in Blacksburg. Hokies 4-3, 2-1 in the conference. And here's the crazy thing. They've won four in a row in Blacksburg. So this is not going to be easy for Georgia Tech coming off that loss against Notre Dame. And, you know, if Haynes King is available, I think that's a big plus for them, obviously. But the last time the Yellow Jackets and Hokies met, you're going back to November 5th, 2022, and it was a 28-27 win by Georgia Tech. And in that game, Zach Pyron led an 11-point fourth-quarter rally. We just saw him play against Notre Dame. So we'll see. It's a big spot, though, for Georgia Tech. And, Mike, to, again, they're on the cusp right now being bowl eligible, right? 5-3.
This is one they got to have. And maybe you look at NC State as the other game. Miami, I know Miami's smarting for a rematch. That will be at Bobby Dodd, but after Miami completely blew the ending of that game, and that's one that still is living in infamy down in South Florida, and then wrapping up with Georgia in Athens. So, yeah, this is one of those two you really think you got to get to be, and this is part of the trajectory for Brent Key and the program. So I think, you know, there's a game or two that you feel. The Louisville game, I still think they could have won. The Syracuse game was tough.
I agree.
Syracuse is playing Pitt, by the way, tonight.
That's a big one.
Syracuse only lost one game, and Pitt, I believe, is like a 2.5-point favorite at home. And Pitt's undefeated, but they're only ranked 19th, so they're not getting the love just yet in the polls. But getting back to Tech, yeah, they gotta have that one. And I do like the job Brent's doing, but you're right. This is. I mean, did you think 7 wins? By the way,
yeah.
Because I thought, give me some credit. I always gave them the credit. I thought they could beat Florida State in Dublin, which, of course, they did. But, it's the injuries are tough. I went back. I didn't see it because I had to go back and watch it, all the stuff to get caught up on the weekend. The crazy thing in that Notre Dame game, we talked about how kind of meh it was with the crowd. Did you see that reverse on the punt fake that Notre Dame ran? That's insane. I mean, I don't even know how you prepare for something like that, but that was one that kept the chains moving for the Irish. But that game, unfortunately, just wasn't the same without Haynes King.
So Miami's living dangerously as we talk about Georgia Tech. And again, they're on the schedule. That game is literally 2 weeks away. They get Duke and then at Georgia Tech on November 9th. But, you know, if you look at their schedule, Mike, once they beat Florida State this weekend, I mean, who's beating Miami is my question. I don't think they get tested until the championship game in the ACC championship.
If Clemson now, again, as Wes Drew mentioned, there are some potential tiebreakers if you have a number of teams. Unfortunately, the conference is getting so damn big that not everybody plays everybody.
That's right.
So would Clemson's strength of schedule, if you got a bunch of undefeated teams, I'd be curious to know, you get off in the weeds on some of these tiebreakers. But, yeah, Clemson, Miami could certainly be something to see in Charlotte. You know, you'd have a good Clemson crowd showing out. Clemson has gotten better. Klubnik's look great. But, is Miami going to crank up the defense? Because they're giving every game they win, it's always a dial-a score with some crazy stuff. And the refs have been involved in three of them.
By the way, Pitt's a 5.5-point favorite at home tonight. So 5.5 against Syracuse as we speak right now. And I don't know if that number is going to move between now and kickoff at 7:30. And then, Mike, the big, you know, obviously the top 25 games this weekend. No Georgia guys. They get a week off before Florida. You heard from Kirby Smart. And if you missed the interview, it's online at odyssey.com. But I think the Notre Dame-Navy game is one where, like, is Navy going to upset Notre Dame? They're double-digit underdogs. They're a 14-point underdog.
Now, the game is in Annapolis, and we know that Navy, again, you and I, for personal reasons, want to see Navy undefeated when they play Army.
It'd be great.
Army-Navy game. And I think most of us listening, sorry, Irish fans, would just love to see Notre Dame taken out for once and for all and end America's long nightmare, because they always find a way to weasel in. And Lord knows, they've weaseled in when it's a 14 playoff. You know they'll find a way when it's a 12-team playoff because of their brand. The other one is, and I said this to Carl earlier, is
Alabama.
If everybody can go in, I mean, like, if South Carolina can do it, I think that Eli Drinkwitz and Mizzou can do it. And that is keep it close against Bama and maybe put some pressure on and Milroe. And a lot of folks still feel Milroe's not 100%. And that's what you saw. I'm not making excuses, but a lot of folks in Alabama feel he wasn't right, certainly in much of the game against Tennessee.
Well, didn't Alabama get what they wanted? Alabama! Didn't they get what they wanted at the end of the game? Tennessee game, you get the ball back. Milroe has a chance to take you down the field and win the game, Mike. And he throws a pick. I mean, this is what Bama fans wanted. So I don't know if he's injured or dealing with a lagging injury. Mm-hmm. But for me right now, and I know we give our official picks tomorrow, 16.5 is a bit rich for me.
Well, just found out Brady Cook is doubtful. There was a question he might be questionable.
Because he came back in the game last week.
And remember, they took him to the hospital, and he came back on the field. Literally got back in the game. But, I mean, we'll see. That obviously is a huge difference. Otherwise, you do like the Tide. Illinois is 5-1. There are 6-1, I should say. They're taking on Oregon. I don't think that offense can handle what Oregon's got, and as far as, you know, getting into a kind of a scoring matchup there. And as you said, I don't think Vandy's going to upset Texas, but I think a lot of Texas fans. I don't think Vandy will upset Texas.
Not after last week.
I got to imagine that, Coach Sark and the guys, you know, licking their wounds. Well, they're going to drop a can of whoop-ass on Vandy.
This is good, man. I mean, honestly, Kirby's done it. We'll see if Sark can do it, where you get your guys, like, you aren't what you thought you were. Mm. You're not as good as everybody says you are. And so now, you know, you come out, and again, this is still a big number, Mike. You're talking about 18.5 points, but I don't think Vandy hangs in there. But Vandy, I have been very impressed with Vandy this year. And if you've not watched them, I'm just telling you, that is a team that competes their butt off, Mike, and their quarterback is pretty talented as well. He's done a really good job, but I don't think they hang this weekend.
And then the big one, we spent some time talking about it earlier, is the high-powered offense, Nussmeier and LSU going up against physicality of Texas A&M. And do you feel that, you know, that if now LSU is kind of not a sleeper because they're a brand, but do you like Texas A&M in this one? It's -2.5 for the Aggies.
Yeah, listen, this is for first place in the SEC. I mean, both of these teams are undefeated right now in the SEC. They both have one loss, but that's what's crazy about this, right? I mean, when you talk about Alabama, they just lost to Tennessee. Georgia lost to Alabama. Again, there's no East-West. Everybody's playing, and we're going to see what the records are at the end of the season. A&M has a chance, Mike, to put themselves in pole position by winning this game.
And I don't want to make it sound like they're finesse, because LSU, by the way, is tied for 7th in the country in sacks. So they're getting after it. That will be something to see. I'm kind of leaning towards LSU, but I don't know how I'm going to bet it this weekend.
It's going to be interesting. All right, we're coming back. We're going to talk about some of these potential pass rushers that may be free and available. I say free, meaning teams moving on from them, but we'd still have to trade for them and give up something. Would you be interested in some of the names we're going to tell you? Also, Hawks' first game was a good one for Trey Young, for Dyson Daniels, and for Double O on Okongwu. We'll talk about that and much more. And also, Brett McMurphy's going to join us from the Action Network, as we'll get some input from him about college football and the landscape of what's going on with the College Football Playoff Committee, etc., coming up in the 6 o'clock hour.